Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 103 with Todd Maslone. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Todd Maslone, we explore a number of interesting topics like I'm looking to do what is best for kids, how to surround yourself with the best people possible, how to use social media to share your ideas and build platforms, and why you need to stop by and say hi to all teachers in the morning. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the content, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by CSC Consulting Group, whose mission is to support people in education and nonprofit organizations to improve processes and enhance the performance of their organizations. Learn more at www.cscconsultinggroup.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. I know the owner and founder of School Spirit Vending. He is a personal friend and he brings hassle-free fundraising to your school. But even better, Matt has written a top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. He's given it away completely free. Get it at schoolzonepodcast.com. That's the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Hey there, better leaders. I am so pumped to be here with Todd Maslone today. He's a principal of Webb Elementary in Navasota, Texas, the 2015 BAMI Award recipient for elementary principal, and the 2014 Classroom Teacher of the Year, the TCA Teacher of the Year, a White House Champion of Change, a National School Board Association 20 to Watch, and Center for Digital Education Top 40 Innovators in Education. Todd's also the co-author of the hit book, Kids Deserve It. Todd, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. I'm excited to be here, and it was an honor even being asked, so I can't wait to chat tonight.
Well, we're about to rock this show. Todd, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Well, you know, working with kids was always something I really enjoyed doing. When I was growing up, I was very active in my church group, and I did a lot of vacation Bible school. I did 14 years of summer at a children's camp as a counselor, and I knew I always wanted to work with kids. And when I first started, I thought that it was going to be in the social work area. But then as I really did my research on that, I get too emotionally involved. And so I was like, no, I can't do the social work thing. And just my family has a lot of teachers in it. And I knew that teaching or working with kids was something I wanted to do. So I pursued teaching. And from the moment I entered the first classroom that I worked in, I just loved every minute of it.
Do you have any crazy camp stories to share with the listeners?
Well, the camp was third through fifth graders that I worked with. And, you know, every summer it was something wild, but it's just so great to be around kids outdoors in an environment where everybody can just let loose and just be kids. And those were probably some of the best times of my working with kids. It's just getting to invest in them emotionally and just build them up and help them see things that they didn't even know were true about themselves.
How would you describe, Todd, your leadership style? How did you develop this style?
Well, I'm in my third year as a principal, and I have a unique path of getting there. I went straight from classroom teacher to principal. And I remember that when I got the job of my first principalship, I looked back at some of the leaders that I had worked under, and I had worked under four principals. And, you know, I worked under all kinds. I worked under one who was a screamer and everybody was afraid of her, but I loved her. I worked under one who I testified in her trial and she went to jail. I went to work under one that was amazing and one of my favorite leaders I've ever worked with. And then I worked underneath one that was just terrible and demeaning and hurtful. And I saw all sides of what leadership can look like. And I knew that when I became a leader, and I think I try to do this now, is just being the kind of leader where I know that I can't do this by myself. And I work with a team. I value my teachers. I trust their opinions. And I know that I'm the leader in the end and I have to make those final calls. But it's not a role that I look at as I'm the expert. It has to be my way or the highway. I'm just looking to do what's best for kids, and I surround myself with the best people possible to make those decisions so that our kids can have the best education possible.
All right, well, I got a million follow-up questions. Number one would be, how do you surround yourself with the best people possible?
Well, one way is just making sure that that I bring in quality teachers for the ones that I hire, but for the staff that I inherited and the teachers that have come along the way, it's just really important for me to build each other up, to make sure that we are an encourager to each other, but also that we're pushing each other. I want my staff and my team to push me just like I'm pushing them. I don't want to rest on my laurels or not be a learner either. You know, I always tell every teacher that I work with that, how dare we walk into a school and tell our kids to learn every day if we're not learning ourselves? And so I really push for my team to learn, and I push myself to learn. And then I think about myself and connecting myself on social media. That was the biggest game changer for me professionally as well as personally, was when I decided to take that leap and start connecting with other educators, and where it began as me collecting ideas, but then me beginning to share my own and then building relationships. And I can think of now, you know, all my best friends in my life are people that I met on social media.
Wow.
And I know that being a third year principal in a very small district, had I not had a network of educators for me to seek ideas from, get encouragement from, challenge me, I would not have made it this far in my principalship, because being an administrator is hard and it's lonely. And when you're in a small district, you don't have a lot of people who can help and support because they've all got their things they need to take care of too. And so I've just been really lucky with some of the amazing individuals that have come into my life that have helped shape me and grow me and that I've gotten to invest in as well.
Absolutely. And you kind of set me up there. So I got to talk to my listeners real quick. Todd just mentioned how lonely it can be as the leader, right, within your school. So if you haven't heard about the masterminds, that's at Hybrid Group Coaching and Leadership Development Community that I offer y'all. Would love to connect with you. And this is Todd Schultz, so that's all I'm going to say, but you know where to find me so I can get you that information. Now, our listeners, obviously, they're tech savvy, at least listening to podcasts. Can you go a little bit deeper in terms of like how you've leveraged social media to share your message and build those relationships?
Yeah, of course. So the first way that I got connected was on Twitter. My assistant superintendent at the time forced me to get on. I did not want to be on Twitter. I didn't care.
That's hilarious.
We lunch or what the celebrities were doing. It was like, this is not for me. I had a Facebook account. Why did I need a Twitter account? And he really pushed me to get out there. And he was like, you know, you've got some ideas that I want you to share. They're good ideas. And I said, I share on campus every day. And he said, yes. He said, but we've got to be a field that shares bigger than the walls of our school. And so I got on social media, and I was there for about 6 months before I really became active enough to share my own thoughts. I spent a lot of time drinking out of a fire hose and just collecting the ideas of others. And it was great for a while. And then I thought, well, you know, this is kind of boring now. Great. I got a bunch of ideas, but this Twitter thing was supposed to be amazing. And then a woman named Angela Myers, who's one of my favorite people, she said, you know, why aren't you sharing your ideas? And I said, well, you know, I see so many great things that other educators are sharing. And I feel like my stuff sucks in comparison. Like I'm not, I feel like my lessons aren't as great. My relationship building isn't as good. I see just these huge successes advertised on social media. And she said two things. First of all, you got to remember that social media can often be a highlight reel. And so we can't take that as the end all be all of the success of what happens in somebody's classroom or school. And the second thing is that every one of us brings our own genius to our field. And we're doing a disservice to others when we don't share our genius with the world.
Yeah.
And so that got me brave enough to start putting some of my own ideas out there. And then, you know, the first time somebody favorites something you say or retweets a tweet, you're like, oh my gosh, that was kind of cool. Somebody liked that. Well, three people retweeted it. I mean, it was one of those that this is wild that anybody would even care what I have to say. And it kind of gave me the bravery to continue sharing my ideas. And in doing that, I started a blog and then it just expanded from there. And now I look at my social media presence and how I choose to connect. And I've got educators that I've met and connected with solely on Instagram.
Right.
And educators that I've met and connected with on Facebook or in Facebook groups or pages. And then the ones I have on Twitter. And then thinking about now, I use Voxer a lot, which is a voice walkie-talkie app. And it's been great because I meet these awesome people on Twitter. And then I can't have a good enough conversation with them in 140 characters or less.
Right.
And so Voxer allows me to have those voice conversations with people. And now attending conferences is so much richer of an experience because I never go anywhere where I'm alone. There's always somebody that I know from social media. And my wife was so funny because when we first got married was when I really started getting active on social media. And I remember going to a conference and I was going to be rooming with somebody that I had never met before. We had just talked all the time on social media. And she was so scared. She was like, I cannot believe you are staying with this person you've never met.
Right.
And I was like, we talk every day. They're like my best friend. And she's like, but you've never met them. And I was like, and it was amazing. And it's funny now because she'll come with me to some conferences and there's a good friend of mine, Brad Gustafson, and his wife and my wife have become friends.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
And we met on social media. And so now we travel and go to conferences together and vacation together. And it's just one of those things that it's like when you're brave enough to put yourself out there and you begin to find your people, not only does it grow you and also grow what you're able to do with your kids, but it also provides you with a network of others that are there to constantly encourage and uplift you. And it makes you sometimes when you're an innovator or when you are trying to break down walls, you can feel like an outcast or you can feel like there's not many people who get you. And then education can become very overwhelming feeling of, oh my gosh, why am I even in this field? I'm trying to do all these creative things or break the system and I'm the only one doing it. And as I got connected with other educators, I began to find other people who had the same beliefs as me or had the same ideals. And it's just kept me pushing forward because I have my people now.
Right. Yeah. I have a friend, Tom, and he says, you know, what's average to you is extraordinary to me. And I can't help but like kind of find it ironic and really, really funny that, you know, the superintendent pushed you, right, to start tweeting. Mm-hmm. I was looking at, you know, your Twitter following. I'm like, man, this guy is popular. Like 42.
I don't know how that happened.
Right. 42K followers. That's 8 times more than me. And like he had to be pushed to be out there. That's so hilarious. But, you know, that sense of imposter syndrome, you know, what do I have to add? You know, it's very real, but you just got to push through it and look at the value that you add to people's lives that you enrich. And it's by giving yourself, right? And now you've got these great relationships. You've met folks that you tour conferences with and your wives are now friends and you hang out hotels or whatever. And it's just, you've made these awesome connections by saying yes, by being brave and putting yourself out there. And it's just, that's so neat to see.
Yeah, and it's still wild to me. Every day I'm like, what the heck? Why am I talking? Like, why does this person want to talk to me? Or why am I talking to this person? Or like, because, you know, I have my edgy heroes as well, too, that I really look up and admire. And like, it's still to this day when somebody I admire favorites one of my tweets or when somebody I admire responds to a question, I'm like, oh my gosh, that person just messaged me back. And I have to keep reminding myself, you know, we're all in this field together. Yep. Nobody is better or worse than anybody else. And so yeah, I have to constantly get out of my head of, well, that person has 100,000 followers. What are they going to care about my lowly self? And to go, you know what? It doesn't matter how many followers they have or how many blog posts they've written or how many interviews they've done or anything. It's just like we're all in this field and we all have these great successes and we all have these epic failures and these really tough days where we doubt everything about ourselves, but we just got to stick together.
Yeah, yeah, definitely got to stick together. Man, I really appreciate what you're sharing there. I'm curious too, like once you decide to put yourself out there, and a lot of times I ask about people's leadership mistake, but I almost want to ask you something different I've never asked before. Since you do put yourself out there and you have a bunch of people watching, what was like the most, I guess, public failure and what did you learn from it? And the reason I asked, like I was supposed to lead a lead up chat, which I participate in quite often, wrote all the questions, Jeff and I, you know, shared it on a spreadsheet. And one morning, Todd, I just didn't wake up. And I missed the freaking chat.
And, oh my God.
And luckily, I mean, he was going to be the co-moderator. Everything was written. I made all the images, but I didn't show up to the chat that I planned. And it was so embarrassing. Like, that was my epic failure. And I think it taught me to set 2 alarms.
Yeah, exactly.
And number two, like, give myself a little grace because at least I was prepared. It's not like the world ended, but gosh, like, I need to let that one go. But let me hear yours, please. Make me feel better, Todd.
Well, you know, I could list like 1,000 epic failures. I feel like I have an epic failure every day. You know, as an administrator, it's like, and I'm very, very hard on myself too. So some of the things that I've used epic failures, some of my teachers are like, what? That's not that big of a deal. And I'm like, no, I messed up. I made a mistake. But, you know, for me, it's just, I can think of so many. Do you want me to talk about on social media or just in my career in general?
I'm thinking like in public on social media, just because that so many more people are watching.
Well, I mean, for social media, I think it's, you know, when you first get online and you see things that people are saying that you may not agree with, or, you know, just like in the real face-to-face world, there's bullies on social media too. And I think a lesson I learned when I got connected originally or at the beginning was that you can't win a fight through text, and you can't change somebody's mind through a tweet. And so being able to know that you don't have to go after the bullies, you don't have to respond to every negative tweet that's tweeted out there, you don't have to, you can just ignore it or block it or move on. And for me, that was a lesson that I had to learn, because I'm like, no, I don't want somebody not to like me. I don't want them to think this or to misinterpret that. And there's been so many times that I've tweeted something and then there were a couple people that made a comment and I had to go back and say, okay, I need to look at this from a different perspective, because what I said there could have been interpreted this way. And that's what I think has been another big benefit of getting connected and having all these ideas and opinions to learn from others, is that it's really given me a much more clear perspective on how I present myself and what I choose to say and my beliefs, and really looking into others and understanding other people's point of views much better.
So a few minutes ago, you talked about the screamer, the felon, the amazing, and the terrible. And it was interesting because you said the screamer, you loved that principle. What did you, I think you said it was she too. So what did you love about her?
Well, she never yelled at me.
Well, that's good.
but she was one that was my first year as a teacher, and she was just so kind to me and really worked with me and really believed in me and encouraged me. And so even though there were qualities that I would not copy from her, there were many that I would copy from her. And I think that's important to remember too, is that even when you work on a team of teachers where there's somebody who is really negative or not a great person to work with, or you work with administrators like that, there's still things to take and learn from them and grow from those experiences as well.
And then you talked about the terrible. What made that administrator terrible?
That was an administrator who was never present, never came into my room. I had students that when I would say this person's name, they would say, "Who is that?" And it was very much of a micromanaged, you need to be doing this at this time. If you're not doing this, you're going to get in trouble. Do it the way I said it or else. And it was kind of like, you don't even know me and you don't ever come to my class. And then you're going to tell me how I have to have things done.
Right.
And so it was always a demeaning environment. I never felt encouraged or uplifted or anything like that.
Yeah, that's no good. We won't touch the felon, but the amazing, what made this person so amazing?
She was just super encouraging. One thing that I really admired about her is we were a large staff. There were about 750 kids at that school. And every morning she would stop by each of our rooms to ask us how we were doing. And even though it was just a quick, "Hey, how's it going?" it was really neat for me to have that moment just to know that she stopped by. She was super encouraging. And what I loved about her too was I knew that I could bring crazy ideas to her. And she would say, "Okay, let's sit down and talk about all the pros and cons. Okay, now that we did that, I want you to run with it." And if it would fail, she wouldn't trivialize me or demean me. She would say, "Okay, what did we learn from this? Let's move on. Let's try something else." And so it was great to be in an environment where, since I am a risk taker, where I wasn't afraid of failure, where I knew that there was somebody there to catch me and somebody there to help me figure it out as I move forward.
I love that last anecdote so much, because helping you, right, a risk taker, think through the pros and cons and then say go, right? Just giving you that type of permission and not waiting for you at the finish line with a 2x4, right? But speaking encouragement into you is such an incredible gift. I've myself been in situations, right, where the 2x4 is waiting and another, you know, a memo or some type of write-up or something like that. And you're like, it actually makes you not even want to try.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
So to have that opposite and almost give you not necessarily free rein, but say, "I believe in you, Todd, and you can do this. And what are you going to learn from the mistakes you make along the way?" really, I think, inspires that individual to greatness.
I completely agree. And that's when you can really build a great team, is when they feel like they have that trust and security to try new things. That's when you have great education happen.
I'm really interested in people's routines and rituals, and you might have an answer to this and maybe not. But do you have some type of first hour of your day ritual that helps you get started?
Well, you know, I get to work about an hour before school starts, and that's kind of my just get there and get in school mode. And I come every morning. The first thing I do is I turn on my computer. I get on Twitter. I share some things out. I look at what some other people are doing. And then I just kind of go and read through some education articles and just get my head in a space of getting to be that learner, because I believe, you know, sometimes I call myself the principal, sometimes I call myself the lead learner, because I want to be learning alongside my staff. And so I want to model that with learning through social media or learning through blogs or watching webinars or getting in my teachers' classrooms and learning from them and what they're doing. And so I try to get in that mindset of before the kids even get here, I want to be in a learner mindset before I move into the day.
Gotcha. And that's about an hour before school starts. What time does school start?
The doors open at 7:15, but the school starts at 7:45.
So does that mean you're there at 6:15 or 6:45?
Yeah, I get there between 6:15 and 6:30 every day.
Wow, that's awesome. What are you particularly proud of your school for accomplishing or attempting this year?
You know, there's so many things. I could list things in every teacher's classroom of something they've done that I'm proud of them for taking a risk or doing. But as a campus as a whole, we took seven teachers and me and one of my assistant principals over to the Ron Clark Academy last year. And if you haven't been there, that is like Disney World on crack for teachers. It is amazing. I went as a teacher about 7 years ago, and then I went as an administrator this last year. And I'm good friends with a lot of the teachers there, but it is such an amazing experience. And one of the things that we brought back that we've been implementing there is what they do that's called the house system. It's kind of based after Harry Potter and the houses, but we've got five houses on our campus. Each one is a different color with a different name that represents a different culture. And all of our kids are placed into a different house, pre-K-5. And they do activities each month as a house. So the kids can get to know each other and work with each other. Doesn't matter what grades they're in. We do house games every month. They get points for all kinds of things. And then at the end of the semester, the house with the most points goes on a field trip where they get to go and interact together. And then at the end of the year, the house with the most points for the whole year goes on another trip. And so it's just just that whole team building thing. And our teachers have really taken off with this idea, and our kids are obsessed with it. And it has been such a great experience.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, I would love to join the houses and, you know, just see what kind of activities and crazy stuff you get into as a result.
Yeah, it's fun.
Today's podcast is brought to you by CSC Consulting Group, a social enterprise with a vision to catalyze sustainable change in our society, one organization at a time. I know one of their leaders, AJ DeLeon, and I worked with him in Chicago. He is a data whiz, and if you're looking for that kind of help, I strongly encourage you to reach out at www.cscconsultinggroup.com. Knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself as a novice principal?
Wow, I think that, I mean, there's so many things that I would look back and tell myself. One of them is to never forget that the most important part of my job is building relationships. You know, building those relationships with the kids is important, even as an administrator, but also building those relationships with your staff and building those relationships with parents. Sometimes as an administrator, you can get caught up in the paperwork or in that nasty phone call or in an argument with a colleague. And just remember that, you know, I have to constantly remind myself that hurting people hurt others. Mm. And so coming from that place of, you know, when somebody is lashing out at me, that it's coming from a place of pain, and I have to take the time to step back and say, okay, where is this coming from and how can I best meet their needs without getting personally upset as well. And so I have to, and the other thing I probably tell myself too is not to take everything personally. And that's still a lesson that I'm learning now. I feel like that's a lesson I've been learning my whole life. But even when a parent is really upset with me about something a different staff member on my campus did, but because I'm the principal, they're upset with me, I take that so personally because that school is my home. That's my family. And so when you're upset with one, you're upset with me. And so I have to sometimes really work on stepping back and going, okay, they don't really dislike me. They're just upset in this moment. But I take everything so personally that that's something I'm still working on.
I can relate. Struggle with that terribly, and you get that negative phone call or whatever, even some side eye from a teacher at a faculty meeting, it can hurt, you know? And so you gotta definitely buffer yourself from that. I'm curious, what works for you in terms of buffering yourself so that you don't let that become a part of your identity or your personality.
You know, that's where it goes back to those people I surround myself with. I've got two buddies that I'm in a Voxer group with. One of them is Ben Gilpin. He's a principal in Michigan. And the other one is Brad Gustafson. He's a principal in Minnesota. And I think about our Voxer group, and there's so many days where we go in and we share great ideas and we share our successes, but we also go in and share our failures. And it's like, guys, I'm struggling here. I don't know what to do here. And just to have those people speak into you and say, you know what? This is one of those things, because they are both very, we're all bluntly honest with each other. And they're like, this is something that you can't take personal. They aren't angry at you. You have to look at this bigger picture. And then I think about, you know, some other friends that I have too, who I just talk to on the phone all the time. I've got a great friend named Roman Novak, who lives in Canada, and he works for the Ministry of Education in Canada. And to have that perspective of, you know, working in a district type thing and being able to provide ideas and resources. Then I think about my friend Travis Crowder, who's a teacher in North Carolina, and just knowing that he has that perspective of being a teacher in another state with unions, because we don't have unions in Texas. And, you know, having those constant perspectives help me keep things in perspective, because you get what you share out. And so when I'm vulnerable and honest with some of my friends and the people I surround myself with, they're vulnerable and honest in return. And we learn from each other, and we remind each other of when not to take it too personally, and when to take it personally and find a way to fix it as well. Like, we don't let ourselves just sulk or just to say, oh, no, you're never in the wrong. Oh, no, I have my friends will say, no, you should not have made that call. You need to go and apologize tomorrow.
Yeah. And Todd, that reminds me again of the masterminds. I mean, 10-second plug, but, you know, we meet for an hour every single week, and to have that type of community to buffer against the criticism and the hardships you face, or give you that tough medicine to swallow when you need to step up your game. That's the power of having that type of community.
Yep.
Todd, what's one class we should add to our schools that's not currently taught that you know of?
You know, I really think that we need more culture and empathy classes. I think if you look at the world at large, but even in the United States, our political climate, doesn't matter what line or what side you fall on, there's so much hate and negativity and venom. And I think a lot of that comes from, we don't spend enough time teaching kids about other cultures, and not in a social studies history context. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about connecting kids with people from other countries, letting them see the stories of what it looks like from a kid from poverty, what it looks like from a kid from wealth, what it looks like from a single parent home, a double parent home, a same gender parent home. I mean, to really take and have these conversations with kids, but allow them to have a space to learn and grow, but also to spend that time teaching the empathy, and really planning social projects and all that kind of stuff, I think is, especially in elementary, what we're missing. Yeah, we've got character education programs. My opinion, that doesn't cut it. That is not working for kids these days. Mm-hmm. We need to give them, they have the world at their fingertips. And so often we're so micro-focused on their school and their friends at their school, that when they leave that building, their world explodes with social media and being able to contact people from any country. And, you know, we've got to build in that understanding, especially for when kids come from small rural towns like mine, that the people that are around you right now, that's not the whole world, and that's not everybody's view. And you can have a view that's different, and you can understand that people are different than you, and that's okay.
Yeah, you're so right on with that. I think one of the greatest gifts of creating this Better Leaders, Better Schools platform has been the ability to connect with folks all around the world. And now I have friends, you know, as far as Australia, you know, Clayton Reedy, he's been on the show, you know, principals in China. I never thought that I would be connected to people like that. And it's just neat, because in a lot of the ways you find out that probably the majority of stuff were very, very similar. And then there are differences that just so enrich all of our perspectives to make us better leaders.
Exactly. And to make us better people.
Oh, yeah. It totally makes us better people. Absolutely. I mean, just even thinking about your little your Voxer group with two other guys, right? Mm-hmm. I think you said Minnesota. I forgot where the other guy's from.
Michigan.
Michigan. But you know, just getting challenged in that from their perspectives, you know, that's a microcosm of it. But yeah, it makes you so, so much better. Well, Todd, when you think of the word leader, who's the first person that comes to mind?
Oh, see, now that's a loaded question because, you know,
sorry.
I mean, there's so many ways to look at the word leader. And, you know, my brain goes in 100 different ways when you say it because.
But who was the first?
Well, I mean, I think of kids on my campus who are leaders. We've got 2 fifth graders right now that I'm training to be social media interns for our campus. And I view them as just great leaders. And then I look at, because the term leader to me, I think is such a, it's such a unique term for each kid. I had a great conversation with a fifth grader last week, who was just making some difficult choices. And we talked about how there are good leaders and there are bad leaders and they both have the title leader. And you have to make the choice of, do you want to be a leader that changes lives for the better and that impacts those to want to make positive change? Or do you want to be a leader that people follow and they become worse and they don't uplift anyone and don't benefit anyone? When I think about leaders in my field in education, I think about leaders like Principal L, who is one of my heroes. I think of people like teacher Nicholas Ferroni in New York, who is really working on diversity and gender equality. And I think about gentlemen like Brad Montag, who's the creator of Kid President and now has his Montag workshop. And he's seeking to inspire people and really help them find themselves again in their passions. And I think about women like Lavana Roth, who has the Ignite Your Shine movement and really encourages people, and Angela Myers with her You Matter. And then I think of leaders like Sine Bell, who's a principal in Katy, Texas, who I just admire so much the work that she does and the way that she leads and her going and doing a whole principal program at Harvard while she's a principal. And then I think of another principal in Texas, Dana Boyd, who was the Texas Principal of the Year this last year and worked to help turn around a school, and just the passion they share and their love for kids, as well as the friends that I mentioned earlier that I connect with every day. I view them in leaders in so many ways. I think about Donalyn Miller, who is the book whisperer and wrote Reading in the Wild, and her passion for providing that space for kids to read and become people who love reading. And then Jennifer Lagarde, who's a librarian, media specialist, who just really travels and speaks and works with schools, districts to really build up those spaces for kids to have where they can find themselves in books. And like I mentioned, my friend Travis Crowder, who's a teacher in North Carolina, he and I just connected a few months ago, and just what he has brought to my realm of understanding of ways to work with the middle school classroom and using literature and poetry and imagery and connecting with characters. I mean, it has totally changed the way that I view the way that I read. Even today, he sent me a poem that they were looking at dissecting in class, and I just sat there in my office and I just cried reading it. And I have never been somebody who was a fan of poetry. I never found the meaning. It didn't connect with me like chapter books or anything like that did. And he's been really talking about, you know, the imagery he uses and the way he's teaching the kids to use this. And I think it was called My 10-Year-Old Self or something like that today. And I just was like, this is so powerful. And the way you can look at using that with kids to change their perspective and their minds is just like all these people. And I could sit here for hours and list people that I just view as these leaders, but they're all leaders in different ways and different aspects and in different subjects and areas. And so
I love it. What was it about My 10-Year-Old Self, the poem that really, you know, I guess moved you in that way?
Well, part of it was knowing how he was going to use it with his students. So being able to see, read it and thinking about, wow, thinking about an eighth grader reading this right now. And how this can change their mindset. But it was looking at this idea of this child, it was a perspective of a kid writing this poem and him losing his innocence of his childhood, and the imaginary friends aren't there anymore. And it was just this, it was such a thing for me to go, wow, how many times as educators are we so focused on the academic side or we're so focused on the test that we are the ones taking that child out of that child and forcing them to grow up and taking away that wonder and excitement. And I don't ever want to be the educator who takes that away from a kid. Their childhood years are already so limited already. Why force them to grow up faster than they have to?
Yeah, don't take away that wonder, that excitement. Don't steal the dreams, right?
Exactly.
What were you like as a 10-year-old?
Oh, my gosh. Well, let's see. I'm very talkative. I have ADHD. I was very active. So my mom had me in baseball, gymnastics, and rodeos.
Nice.
So I was doing all of those at 10. And it's funny now because people can't believe that I actually rode bulls or showed horses or things like that. But no, I was a very active, we lived in the country. I was outdoors all the time and I'm a total city boy now.
Yeah, yeah.
But, back then, I mean, I was always out in the four wheeler playing around outside, active imagination, still have a very active imagination, but.
Nice, nice. Todd, what's the worst leadership advice you've been given or heard people give?
You know, I don't know if there was the worst leadership advice I've given. Sometimes I think we can focus too much on the scores and let that be a defining factor of success. And I'm a believer that our job as educators is 50% academic and 50% emotional. And when we give the power to the scores, we demoralize our teachers, but we also demoralize our students. And they see themselves as a failure based on a number on a page instead of looking at the growth they've had or the successes that they've experienced. So for me, it's just that idea of somebody saying, you know what, we have to take everything out of education except for test prep and get that so the scores will go up. And it's like, no, you can teach high quality education and scores will increase. It's not, you don't have to teach a test.
Concerning school leadership, have you changed your mind on anything over the past few years?
You know, my first year as a principal, I had big dreams. I was wide-eyed. I thought I could just go in there and take everything that I had found successful in my classroom and empower that to have my teachers do the same. And it was a big eye-opener for me the first year to step back and go, you know what? That worked for me and that worked for my personality and my students at that time. That doesn't mean that is what has to work for everybody. And being able to be okay when teachers do it differently or maybe do it in a way that I'm not even sure will actually work. But I've been able to go, you know what? Take it and run with it because that's what my principal told me. And so just that idea of you can't change everybody at the same time. And just like with kids are on all types of learning paths and what they're able to accomplish, teachers are the same way. They don't all move at the same rate. And I have to push each one of them a little bit differently. And you can push somebody so much harder when you work on building that relationship with them.
Yeah, it's that relational capital, right, that you can spend since you've got the deposits. Todd, how do you want to be remembered as a leader?
You know, I want to be able to have my team and the students at my school say that he loved me, he empowered me, he viewed me as the expert in my room, and he was there to help when I needed help, but he was there to step away when I needed to try to fly on my own, but he was there to help pick me up when I fell and didn't make me feel bad for taking a risk and having it not succeed. I just want to build a school where every single person that leaves our doors leaves knowing that they are worthy, they are valuable, that they have something that they bring to the table that is so important. And no matter what their role is with kids, we're all educators and nobody should be viewed in a hierarchy of I'm better than you are because I have this degree or I was given this title. We're here to work together and I want people to say that he was my family. And when I left, it was a hard decision because I felt like I was leaving my family. And that's kind of the environment that I hope that I'm building.
I really like that last quote too. We're here to work together. Mm-hmm. I was thinking maybe I might make it the podcast title, but we'll see. What's one book every principal should read right now and why?
Well, I mean, obviously I'm going to say Kids Deserve It, which is the book I co-wrote with Adam Welcome.
Absolutely.
Just give that a little plug out there.
We'll link it up in the show notes. Oh, yeah.
That was a definite labor of love for ours. But, you know, there's been two books that we've read. Well, I'll give you a couple books. So one of them, of course, is one of my favorite books, and that's Teach Like a Pirate by Dave Burgess. I don't care what your role is in education. That's a great book, and I loved it. And his wife actually just released Lead Like a Pirate that she wrote. Shelley Burgess wrote it with Beth Huff. That's just as exceptional. But there was a book that we read my first year with us as a new staff together. And that was Kim Bearden. And her book was Crash Course, Lessons I Learned from My Students, Oh, get your Kleenex ready for that book. But it was such a good book with quality takeaways for education. And Kim is one of my favorite people on the entire planet. The sweetest woman I've ever met. She's so compassionate. She's so incredible. She's the co-founder of the Ron Clark Academy as well. But that book is one of my all-time favorite books that I've read as a leader. And then we read a book called The Energy Bus this year as a staff in the spring. And it was just a really good pick-me-up book to really help us keep focused on what we're spending our energy on and what we are going to choose to have control over in our lives. And so those are just some of the books that I love. There's so many that I've been reading lately, but those are the ones that are really always heavy on my heart.
That's great. And you just shot off a number of them, and listeners, those will always be linked up for you in the show notes. So I definitely, encourage you to check them out. Todd, what do you do for fun now?
For fun, I mean, I'm a big TV addict, whether it's Netflix or shows I've DVR'd. That's my way I decompress, that or reading. I've got some great friends in my life who really gave me some great books to read just to push my thinking culturally or character-wise that aren't necessarily educational books, but they're chapter books. And so they're just great stories. And I've read like 3 or 4 of them in the last month, and they have just been growing me so much as a person and helping understand people who don't look, sound, or have lived the same life as I have.
Yeah, I just want to give you a shout out too. I was adding your book to my like book spreadsheet for all the listeners, and Kids Deserve It was mentioned all the way back in episode number 78.
Oh, wow.
We talked a lot about social media, and I'm just curious what your favorite social media platform is.
Mine is definitely Twitter. That's where I started getting connected the most. And that's still my favorite because there's so many people on there.
Yeah, I think it's still my favorite too. I'm starting to like Instagram a little more, but it's just like kind of where I made my splash first. So it's like my first kiss on social media.
and there's others that I've connected with people on Periscope, mm-hmm. Voxer, mm-hmm. Instagram, Facebook. I mean, I have people that I've met or that I talk to only on some of those platforms, who aren't on Twitter or aren't on Instagram. And it's just how I choose to connect with and who I choose to connect.
If you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
Oh my goodness. I wish I was much better in large crowds. I'm an extroverted introvert. Uh-huh. So I know how to turn it on. But as soon as I get off the stage or as soon as I don't have to be that personable, friendly person, it's like, whoosh. Okay, let me find a table in the back of the room. Give me a bottle of water. Let me just chill here. And then if people come and talk to me, great, I'll talk. But I'm not a go-getter, go out in the crowd and mingle and mix. And so I wish I was naturally good at that. But it's something I definitely have to push myself at and work at. And it surprises people when they hear me present or see me at different events because I seem like that boisterous personality. But it's like, no, this is who I wish I was all the time. But that's my extroverted side that only comes out when I'm pushing myself like that.
Right. Yeah, I can relate to that as well. Todd, what message would you put on all school marquees if you could for a day?
Well, I think about, the last sentence I say on our announcements every morning, and that's the number one rule at Webb Elementary is be brave. And so I think if I could put one thing on every marquee, it would just be those two words, be brave, because I think that can encompass so many things and just remind our kids that whether that's be brave in making a new friend, be brave in stepping out and sharing your idea in class, be brave and taking a risk when you don't know how to solve a problem. I think that can be used in so many ways.
Well, Todd, you did it. I'm very proud of you. This is the last question. It's a tough one. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top 3 priorities?
Well, when I think of it building wise, I mean, I love natural sunlight and I love nature. So I would definitely find ways to have that nature be involved throughout the school and have just windows everywhere with flexible seating options and different spaces for learning besides the traditional 4 walls of a classroom. But thinking about what I would prioritize collaboration and working together in different grades and different subjects and kind of reevaluating the traditional way of school and how it works and seeing, because we're such in a mindset of kindergarten has to be with kindergarten, first grade has to be with first grade, it has to be these many periods, we have to cover these subjects. I would love to have the freedom to kind of just reevaluate the whole system and say, you know what, why don't we let second and third graders learn about Texas history over here, and then let our kindergartners and fourth graders learn about this over here, and then let only this group. I mean, there's so many ways that I could think and run with that, but I could be here for hours talking about that.
Well, I'll let you off easy then, and we won't hold the listeners for any much longer. Well, Todd, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any actionable steps you'd like the listeners to take after listening? And what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, you know, actionable steps. I think the biggest thing I can say is find five people and encourage them and invest in them today. Whether that is you send them a note, you give them a Sonic drink, you call them up and just tell them how much they mean to you. We don't take enough time to tell those around us how much they mean to us and to let them know that we see them and we appreciate them. And so I think that's the best thing I could say to go out and do is just find those people. You don't tell them that you love them or appreciate them enough and just go and tell them. And as far as connecting with me, you can Google my name, but I'm pretty much on every social media platform. My website's toddnesloney.com as well as kidsdeserveit.com. And you can connect with us and use the hashtag Kids Deserve It to join in on the conversation. Yeah, you can find me everywhere.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Todd. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Todd in the search bar. In the show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Todd, thank you so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better. Better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.